Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path, ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Darrell Williams, a master life coach, White House Communications Agency Hall of Fame member, and military veteran with 30 years of federal service. Darrell's leadership and coachings draw on extensive experiences, including leading over 500 White House missions and playing a key role in emergency communications post September 11th. Today, he shares his insights on leadership, purpose, and a life of service. Join us for an inspiring journey with a true servant leader. Darrell, how you doing today, sir?
Doing good, Sherman, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem, man. Just trying to figure out why you're a Las Vegas Raiders fan.
Me, man, I grew up in Compton, right? Everybody saw the movie Boys in the Hood, where once they got the money, they bought the Raider gear. Growing up in Compton High and with the Walton and Wright of Kennedy, all we did was Raider fan. But although it was a lot of Ram fans back in the day, Cowboys and Steelers, but most of my guys, we were all Raider fans.
Man, that's crazy. I grew up in Carson.
Nice.
Yeah, so we're in the Delamo area, so yes, we're like family, you know what I'm
saying?
Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, all of my friends from Compton is, yeah, all of my close friends, because we all go to school together. I'll tell people, like, man, I grew up like a mile from Compton. Like, you could literally walk to Compton from where I grew up at.
Yeah, especially the Delamo area. Definitely.
Yeah, so what part of Compton you grew up in?
So I was on, 114th and Claude Street. It was over there near like Willowbrook, Walton, kind of Robert F. Kennedy. It's like Alondra and Compton Boulevard, like that little.
Oh, yeah, you're right down the street.
Oh yeah.
I was right there. Close. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what year you graduate from high school?
Class of 84.
Oh, okay. Oh,
way
wow.
Back in the
84?
Day. Yeah, man. Back in the day.
That was a heavy time.
Oh, fourth most dangerous city in America.
Yeah, man, because I say my dad grew up in South Central and he graduated in 76.
Okay.
And his younger brother graduated in 87. And they're two totally different types of people. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I ask that because I just know, like, people don't understand, like, L.A. in the 70s was totally different than when the 80s hit and when crack cocaine impacted the city. And I could just tell, say I have a friend and I'm like, my dad, I looked at his yearbook when he graduated from Crenshaw, and they had a swim team, chess club, everybody smiling, happy. You know what I'm saying? It was like a whole different environment, beautiful people. Mm-hmm. But then once you hit like the 80s and you look at my uncle's pictures, it's totally different.
No smiling, no swimming.
Right.
Just basketball and football and track. That's pretty much the three.
Yeah. And I was like, y'all had all of these activities. Like, what happened? And I'm just like, wow, man, like the way the city just got impacted from drugs, which is so heavy. And I was born in 86. And so I'm a product of that because I say, man, even though the crack epidemic, I wasn't alive then. I'm like the aftermath of that.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's like a lot of my friends came from broken homes. It was a lot of foster kids. It was like at least four foster homes on my block filled with kids in and out. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
And I was just
like,
it's ridiculous, man. And Carson was just full of foster homes.
Sure, man. At least they had them in Carson Compton, man. They were like, I don't even want to raise my own kids, let alone raise somebody else.
Yeah, I heard it just depends on where in Compton, though, because one of my friends grew up in Compton and she said that there was a lot of foster homes on
That's
her block,
cool.
too.
That's cool because they're much needed, man. Definitely much needed.
Yeah. And so after high school, is that when you went to the military?
I did, man. It was so funny talking about the rap game when it was coming out and Compton High. It was just so bad. The violence was so crazy. Our principal, man, was like thinking outside the box. Like, how do I curb some of this violence? So at that time, he reached out to one of my buddies, DJ Mix-a-Lot, because he was a DJ back then. He was like, we're thinking about doing these lunchtime jams just to curb the violence. Are you good with that? And he was like, yeah. So he was the DJ. I was one of four rappers and went on, I don't know if it was once a week or whatever it was, but it was like you said, the smiling came back, the laughing, the joy. And it was like all the gangsters had a truce. Yo, don't mess this up. Let's keep it going. And so I thought I might get into a little bit of rap, but it was like, okay, we ain't really getting off on anything. And the real future was like my face. One Saturday, I was walking to, I think it was like Winchell's back then, right? They had a big Winchell's Donuts in that area. And I ran into this recruiter and I was like, man, I want to talk to this dude. I was trying to avoid him, Sherman. And he cornered me and he was like, yo, what you going to do, young blood, when you get out of school? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Go to college or something. And he's like, where are you going to go? I was like, I don't know, University of Arkansas. And Sherman, he pulled out this book. It had University of Arkansas, how much it cost to go, requirements. And it was like at that moment, it was like life got real. It was like, yo, this ain't a joke. You need to listen to this brother. He got my attention. We started talking. And I love what he was saying so much. I joined the Army when I was in the 11th grade, which is delayed entry program, but I couldn't go until the following year. And so I already knew going into my last year at Compton High, like I'm joining the military. And it was so funny. On graduation day, they had the list of where everybody's going and what you're going to do. And it was like about 20 of us going to military. And we didn't even know because nobody even talked about it. It was like, I'm still trying to figure stuff out. So for me, I joined in 84 and I never looked back, man. Just fell in love with the whole environment of leadership and coming together and meeting all these different cats from all over the United States, guys from Cabrini Greens in Chicago and Gary, Indiana, and New York, the Bronx, and everybody. When you're in the military, your nickname is your city, right? So it was like, yo, Compton, come over here and spit some rhymes. Tell us what it's like up in there. And it was just an amazing experience. If I had to do it all over again, I would definitely join the military.
I thought you was gonna say you would have kept rapping because you lived around the corner from Eazy-E, so you could
I
have been up.
did. I did. But at that time, man, it was almost like you're hoping that it's going to come. But because he was like 3 years, because he was around my sister's age. So we were still kind of, I think the big rap thing at that time, I think it was Toddy T. I think he came out with Battle Ram. And that
Oh
was like,
yeah.
so it was around that time, but he was the only one that was really squeezing something. So I was like, nah, I can't wait like that. I need something that's going to be like consistent. And like I said, when I joined, it was cool. And it was so funny. I had two cousins, one that was in the Army, one was in the Navy. Both of them got out after their first enlistment. But they both told me, like, hey, if I had to do it all over again, I would have retired from that joint because I left and I didn't really come back to anything. So the big thing they had on me when I left was don't just join the Army for a new car and a stereo system, like, really gain a career. And even after my first 4 years, I liked it. It was good. When you're young, man, you don't really know. So I'm thinking, like, yeah, maybe I'll just go back to California and do something. And I just remember having a conversation with my mom and my dad, and they were like, what you coming home for? I'm like, it's home, right? That's where everything's at. And they were like, yeah, but you're a man now. You need to go find some new things and new adventures. And man, I'm just so glad I listened to them because I ended up re-enlisting and kept re-enlisting. And next thing you know, I just made a career out of it.
Man, that's amazing because I often tell people all the time, my brother, he's active duty in the
Nice.
military. I think he's 8, 9 years or 8 years. I don't know,
Oh,
eight,
he in
nine
it
years.
now.
Yeah. So I was like, man, you might as well retire. Like, why would
Absolutely.
you? Why? I tell everybody that, like, and they'd be like, no, man, I got to get out of here. I'm like, bro, you will not have any retirement plan like you
Nope.
would have from the military.
A
And it's
fact.
only what, 20 years or 30
Only
years?
20. Only
Yeah, 20
20.
years. I'm like, what is that? You'll be 40 something, but it's
start a second career.
Yeah, and why you still getting paid? And I'm just like, I'll tell people, I'm like, oh, hey, I get it. But I have one brother that just got out the Navy, another one still in the Navy. I have a cousin in the Army. Mm-hmm. I have my entire family almost. My dad was in the Army, not around the time where you were in. He sure. got out. But yeah, uncle in the Army, Marines. Yeah, man. It's, yeah, auntie that's a combat veteran. Yeah, man. So it's like my family is, I would have been a veteran too, but my mom was going crazy at the time because of it was during the Iraq War.
Yeah,
when I graduated from high school. So I thank God I didn't. You know what I'm saying? Because
different paths for different people. I get it.
Yeah. But trust me, I was ready. I was like, man, I got to get the hell up out of LA. It's too much going on. Because I was an aftermath of the crack epidemic. Not no opportunities, really. I was like, man, I don't know what I got to do something. And I got to get out of my parents' house because my dad is crazy.
It's funny you say that. One of the biggest speeches I heard from my dad right before I joined the military, he said, two men can't live in the same house, so you need to figure this out. That was his speech. Two men cannot live in the same house. I'm like, so you saying I need to be gone on the day of graduation, or do I got a couple of days after graduation? Clarify that. And I think a lot of that, and then plus me being the oldest, it was like, you know what? If I go do this, just maybe I can just show my brother and sister there's a different path, because my grades wasn't like that. We definitely didn't have any money for college, barely what we had. So one thing that was cool out of it too, not just for me to join it, but both my brothers and my sister joined the military, and I'm sure they joined because I joined. And then only my middle brother stayed for 20. My sister and my younger brother got out, but still, at least they got 4 years in and they had a chance to figure out what they wanted to do. So I think even if people don't stay, it's still cool just to just help you grow up a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because my brother that's out, he's in dental school, working to be a dental assistant. He got the GI Bill helping him out. He's doing something. You know what I'm saying? It's definitely different from when he first graduated. Like, oh, yeah, I'm taking a class here and I'm doing, because any college, some people just say they're taking classes. Sometimes you just know that it ain't serious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because we're still trying to figure it out. But one thing, and like you talk about in the title, man, the biggest takeaway for me in the military was just learning those leadership skills. Like, you saw leadership. I know people like me saying it, but it's true. I saw leadership in the gangs. Because those guys are leaders. Somebody's following them, even though it's for different reasons, right. But they're leaders. So to go to the military for me, it allowed me to really figure out why people are so influential and what you can do with that influence if you want to do it on a positive tip.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny that you say that, because I have a friend that was grew up in LA with me, but he was from Memphis. And he said that when he went to Memphis, he started to notice that a lot of the gang activity in California or in LA is political. It's like you have a hierarchy, you know what I'm saying? And they have people that follow orders. And he was like, in Memphis, it's every man for himself. But in LA, it's more so, hey, bro, they didn't gangbang. You knew that they were not about that life. Why did you do that? Okay, you have to answer for this. Or get disciplined, or whatever they call it. And it's funny because growing up in LA, I learned that there's like a hierarchy. It's okay, this person calls the shots because they're the toughest.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And they put in work or for whatever it is. So just being it's funny how both of them relate, because my uncle, he told me that sometimes the people in the gangs in the city, there are protectors from the other predators. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes it's not that they're bad people. They're more so, we're supposed to be here protecting this neighborhood. And it was, and when I got older, I started to see that, because like, say I had to have friends that were in gangs, period. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They would be like, nah, man, who messing with you? And they're like 3 years younger than me. I'm talking about ready. Gun smoking, like, where they at? They messing with the homie? And I was like, wow, these people really aren't like, I hate to say bad, but that's right. How people will think that they are, because it's more so like they grew up, they inherited this beef or this animosity, that this self-hate that they now have to protect themselves from. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's very true.
Yeah, and it's crazy because at the end of the day, I'm sure you're a testament of it too. You knew some of those people growing up, and they were good people. They were loving, they're caring, they're understanding. But next thing was, man, I have to be involved in something to protect myself from all of these other people and all of these other entities that are trying to knock me out. Okay, boom. My choice is I got to be from this gang. You know what I'm saying? I have to do these certain things. Okay, you came over here. You shot my friend. I love this guy. I grew up with him. Now I have to do something with you.
Yep.
And I seen that watching Boys in the Hood. The way they did that movie, it was just so true.
Very like, true.
Man, the homie got killed. And next thing, their friends or whatever, they're like, nah, we have to retaliate. I'm hurt. I love this guy. I grew up with him. We were like brothers. You know what I'm saying? And it's just a perpetuating cycle over and over again.
And it's funny you said it. Definitely that cycle. And when, like, me joining the military and meeting, like you said, other people from other neighborhoods, but then especially meeting those guys that was from California that also joined military, every one of us, in one way or another, was like, we just felt like we had to break the cycle. We had to just do something totally opposite of what our family was doing. I still remember guys on the block when I got released. They thought, oh, man, you ain't going to make it. You'll be back out here next week or next month. You too small or smart enough and all that stuff. But I also tell people, too, when I do a lot of speaking at the schools in the D.C. area, like, my neighborhood made me who I am. Like, I grew up keeping my head on a swivel. Like, you didn't have to tell me that. Like, that's just how we reacted.
Yeah.
So when I joined the military and we were rolling with somebody maybe not from the city or had that street smart, like, they were, like, appreciative. Oh, man, I'm glad I was with you going downtown Frankfurt, Germany, because I wouldn't have been thinking like that. Man, you always got to think like that. Know your presence, know what's around you, because you never know what's going to happen.
Man, seriously, because people be always tell me, like, why do you look lost? Because I'm looking around, I'm making sure, any, you know what I'm saying?
All
but
the
I,
time.
All the time. And they'll be like, I'm like, nah, man, it's because I have to observe my environment. I have to check everything out. And as soon as you see something, because it's like this. I actually said this on another podcast. When you grow up in those type of environments, you learn how to read body language and energy. You know what I'm saying? So as soon as I seen some people, I'm like, okay, I know this is a little off and this might happen. So let me keep an eye on them damn near the whole night. If they come close to me, make sure that you're checking out, okay, what do I have around me that I could throw at them? How, if something happens, where can I exit at? Do I have a clear way to leave? It's just so crazy that we were just conditioned to be that way. You know what I'm saying? No matter what. But it's, if you're at a party and somebody starts shooting inside the party, which I've been involved
all
in,
the time.
That traumatizes you. Like, people trying to get out and all of this stuff. Like, I've been, man, I'm traumatized for life behind certain things that happened just in the city.
Absolutely. And that's why I always tell people, again, my neighborhood conditioned me for the military, because some of the stuff they talk about, watching your surroundings, paying attention, that they call it, like, that security awareness, like, I've just grown, born into that. Mm-hmm. So what you telling me, like, oh, so you want to do that? Like, I was back on the hook, on the street. Got it. Like, you ain't got to tell me. Like, I understand that to the T.
And it's so funny because people, like, say the way I stand in my presence, people assume that I was in the military.
Or oh, I can
security
see that.
Guard. Like, all of that. And I was like, my dad, he was in the army. And then right after that, he joined the Nation of Islam. Then his brother joined in there, and I was just raised by both of them. So I was like, man, I knew nothing but militants growing up. Watch how you eat. Watch how you do this. You need to exercise. That was embedded in me before it became a fad. Right. And there's a lot of stories of people like, I was fat and I was 200 pounds and I was this and I was that. And I did all of these different things. I'm like, man, I never did any of that. Like, it was like, when you from LA, drug addicts and all of these different things, you'd be like, man, heck no, I'm not. I got to make sure I keep myself sharp.
Absolutely. And that's why leadership is so important, because leadership can come in so many different forms, so many different directions. The biggest thing I tell kids is you just got to pay attention and want to do better for yourself. You don't do it for somebody else. How can I improve me? How can I change up my family paradigm? And then once I do it, who else can I bring behind me? Is it my brothers and my sisters, one of my partners? That's why I would tell people leadership is so important, because you don't just get rewarded for yourself, but you actually do open up doors for somebody else.
Yeah, definitely. And I had a conversation yesterday on my podcast about that. Is I'm more so stopped thinking about what everybody else is doing and more so started pouring more so into myself. And then with myself, I can be an example for everybody else to look at. And they could be like, okay, I see something that's working for him. Maybe I should pay attention to what he's been saying or what he's been doing. You know what I'm saying? And leading by example and becoming somebody that someone could look at and say, okay, I want to follow. And that's most important than accusing people or judging people or making people feel bad for what they're doing. It's just be the example, be the light. And then when you're the light, the darkness goes away around you. And it's surprising how once you become a certain type of individual, you don't even have to really worry about cutting people off. They'll cut themselves off. And I tell people that all the time. I'm like, look, and it got revealed to me because say I'm friends with some of the most notorious, like I went to Crenshaw High School.
Oh yeah,
I'm
I
friends with some
understand.
of the most notorious
Yeah,
Crips. And
Chris.
hold on, not Mafia. No, don't say
No,
that. No, it
it
was
was him,
a,
but back in
but
my day, they was
yeah, no, but the Rolling 60s, 40s. So that's, so I got some friends from that gang. And it's not that I need to stay away from them because I'm
That's who we
definitely a
grew up with.
follower of the Gospels, right? And I was just like, Jesus would go around those people and teach them. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it wasn't that Jesus was like, okay, if I'm around them, I'm a stray away from the word or I'm end up being like them. It's more so if I go around them, they're not going to talk to me about drugs and gang banging and all of this stuff. They're gonna be like, hey bro, what kind of books you reading? What could I do with my business? Or how should I do this? And the conversation is totally different.
Absolutely. It's so many people, they don't even know that I'm a sociopath to this day. And then a lot of people, when they do find out, it's always somebody else talking, because I never say, bring that up at all. Once I'm outside of church, that's irrelevant, right? I'm just trying to live my life as the best leader I can be. And then, like you said, hopefully somebody will say, hey, what do you do to stay married for 25 years? What do you do to raise your kids where they send my straight and not crazy? What are you doing? What do you read? Like you said. And once I start talking to people and they're like, why aren't you out there trying to convert people? I'm like, because that ain't my life, man. I do my stuff to make me better. And then if somebody thinks that they want to improve their life and they ask me and they invite me, then I will say, hey, here's what works for me. I know it ain't for everybody, but maybe there are certain parts of it that you may want to take away and run with it. And like you said, being around those type of people, to me, like even when I was in the military and I eventually got a special assignment to work for the White House, I would still come back to LA a lot and go to the neighborhood, and they would be like, yo, man, we like proud of you, D, man. You made it. You representing us. And that's one thing I tell people, when you carry yourself a certain way and really live your own purpose instead of trying to be like somebody else, they respect you even more, and they don't want anything to happen to you because you represent them. It was hard for people to understand that when I used to go to the schools in the DC area. What do you mean? I'm like, even the people in your neighborhood that's not educated and all that, trust me, they watching you. And when they see you, they're like, no, what are you doing, young blood? You got some smarts on you. Go and get back in them books. Don't be like me. And that's a sign of respect.
And I get that a lot, man. Even when I'm feeling down. It's, man, one of my boys left me a message and it impacted me because growing up, we used to go at it, joke with each other, whatever. He was like, sure, man, I love what you're doing, bro. I see you,
Set.
bro, with the fitness, with all of these different things, bro. Keep going. And I almost started
Respect.
crying in the gym
Sure,
because it was
sure.
like, it just hit me. And I was just like, wow, this is God using him and other people to keep me straight. You know what I'm saying? Because when you, I'm an entrepreneur, so I did so many different things in my life, but nothing is as impactful as what I'm doing now. I'm telling you, it's, man, my mom called me today. I seen that episode with you and the pastor. It was so wonderful
It
because I did a
was.
podcast with a pastor,
Yeah, I
right?
did. I saw
Oh, you did?
it.
Saw
Oh,
the whole
yeah.
thing?
No, we didn't get to see the whole thing because we had to take our daughter.
Oh,
Me and my
wow.
wife was checking it out, and we was like, as soon as I think you had made a reference about 88th Street and something, she was like, I know where that is.
Oh yeah, that was a church. Oh
Yeah.
wow, man. I'm like, wow, because I literally just put it out like late last night. So yeah, man. So it was just like, wow, like my mom, I'm over here thinking she gonna call me about her grandchildren. But the first thing she mentioned, I saw that episode and you were right. I tell people that the church is within them, and I was just like, wow, like this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. And that's another thing I tell people is when you're doing leadership the right way, it just opens up so many doors, not just for you, but for other people. But then it also gives people hope. And that's what people don't realize. You don't do leadership just to keep people alive or keep yourself alive, but you also do it, and the remnants of it is you give people hope. And you don't know who those people are. You don't know when they're watching you or how they're watching you. But when you do find out, I always tell my wife, I said, man, that person didn't have to tell me that. They could have just thought it and left it on. But man, when people actually and verbally express something to you, Sherman, to say, hey, I like what you're doing, or man, I like how you do that. Man, that's one of the highest areas of flattery.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially when those people know your flaws and really know who you are. You know what I mean? There's nothing in this world that feels better than that. Because I made a lot of money in my life, and I'm like, that doesn't even really matter. Like, it's great just to know that, because like the past few years, I've been to several funerals, and I was just more so had me start thinking about my life and what will really matter when it comes to my achievements and my obituary, you know what I'm saying? And I often tell people, like, what will people say about you on your obituary? It's not gonna say this person had a nice car and drove this and did that, and da 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 da. It's gonna have your family on there, what you've done, your real accomplishments, and that's it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what, and that's more how I'm looking at, because I knew Nipsey Hussle, and from the beginning, and it was just so crazy how impactful his funeral was. Like, President Barack Obama wrote something to be said at his funeral. All of these people, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan came and spoke. And I was just like, wow, for all of this to happen, like, this man must have, he had to do something. You know what I'm saying? And it could have been a lot shorter than that if he didn't choose to go in the path that he was on. It could have just been like, man, Hermias Shegadon was a homie. He had a kid and he just died in the street. Like, it could have been at a small church, but he had the Staples Center. Yeah, I was actually there too. So it was full.
Nice.
People were crying. I was just like, dang, he's, man, it was filled up. Then a procession, it was just like, man, how, not to say that I will impact people on that level,
No, I know
but
what
it's
you
more,
mean.
yeah, but it's more so like, impacting people, period, changing people's lives. You know what I'm saying? And that resonated with me more than anything.
And that's why, again, and perfect example of leadership. Like what he was doing, even though he might not put on that title, but he was showing leadership. And that's why I tell a lot of people is don't worry about trying to be the next so-and-so, or just be the best person you can be, capitalize on your talents, follow your gifts wherever they're going to take you, especially the hard stuff. Because sometimes they don't realize the hard stuff is those things that really chip off those things that you don't need and build up more of those things that's going to carry you through to where you're going. And that's why I tell people, man, why life is so hard, why people get smoked. I say, man, I can't answer everything. All I know is the way we react to how hard life is and the way we react to people being smoked, we can use that in a way so that we make ourselves better, but also make those around us better.
Yeah, because some questions, man, I don't even want to answer. I'm like, man, I have no
I
idea.
don't know.
Yeah, that's probably the number one answer for me is, man, I can give you what I think, but at the end of the day, we all don't really know. And I tell people this, I'm like, man, think about a lifespan on Earth is just about 60 to 80 years, if you're lucky. You know what I'm saying? And the Earth has been in existence for millions of years. So your life is just a blip, gone. You know what I mean? Because I think about it now, I'm like, wow, I'm about to be 40 years old. This is, I'm almost live half of my life expectancy, or it could be a third. Who knows? But it's, I don't really put so much into me trying to change the world and do all of these things. It's just, man, the best person I could change is myself. I can't say that one day I probably will impact somebody that can change the world or whatever, or change their environment or change their community. Hopefully that happens. But at the end of the day, man, we just got to just focus on doing the work and not so more what could happen or what should happen or whatever, because who knows, the work that you're doing can impact generations, even though you unintentionally did it. You know what I'm saying? And we don't even know that the root cause of these people's life changing was you talking out of school and a young boy was watching it and probably don't remember what you look like, your name or anything like that. He was just like, man, one day this dude just came up to the school and he said this and it changed my life. And next thing I went to the military too, and I did this and I got a family. And you would probably never know that you impacted that person's life in that kind of way.
No, that's a fact, man. I tell a lot of people, I used to be a youth pastor when I was in the military. And I remember my wife and I, before we had our three kids, we went through two miscarriages. And I just remember the kids, man, they're just so cool. They're like, yo, Mr. Durrell, can we ask you a question? I'm like, yeah, man, my life is an open book. They're saying, you be doing all this stuff for people and you like one of God's mans. Why he let that happen to y'all like that? And I tell you, Sherman, it was so great. Like I said, nobody wants to go through tragedy, but I really tell people, once you have the strength to get through it, man, you don't realize even how you maneuver through that situation, like you just said, is an example of people, because, you know, I was able to be raw with the kids and like, yo, hey man, death, man, it can be on anybody's doorstep, right? That's why I keep telling y'all about making the right decisions, right? Watching who you hang around, right? That's just external stuff. Then there's internal stuff that happened because of health reasons or reasons that we don't even know. Mm-hmm. So I would tell them, like, they were like, so why are you not like cursing God out? Why are you still teaching us? He let you down, didn't he? And I was like, that's one way you can look at it. But the other way I can look at it is there are some things that we just can't explain. But if I keep trusting him and keep doing what I'm supposed to do, then maybe you'll remember what happened to this minister. Man, this dude lost his kids and didn't have kids. And he was with us like we were his kids. He went through pain and stuff, but he still took us on his youth retreat. He still took us on his concert. Like, you know, what type of God is this dude serving that he said it gave him strength? I don't understand. I don't know what that means, but I saw it. And mm-hmm. I saw that this dude didn't give up on his wife. He didn't go off on her, start playing the blame game. If you took better care of your body, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Like, he just kept pressing on and pouring into us. And it was so cool because I told him, I said, I don't even understand it all. I said, but y'all might understand it. But hopefully just take away that there's always going to be pain in our life. But it's how we work through the pain. It is going to make us better.
Right. And that's one thing that people don't understand. And I like love that some pastors are vulnerable enough to tell us what's going on in their life personally. I remember a pastor that I adore. I grew up in the church with him and he ended up becoming a pastor, Pastor David Sutton, and his daughter got pregnant and he ended up acknowledging it in front of the church because she wasn't married. You know what I'm saying? Anything like that. She was pregnant. And he just spoke about it. This isn't the first time this happened to people. Like, this happens. And I'm here to tell y'all, this is what me and my family are going through. And I admired him so much for that. And now she didn't marry the guy who she got pregnant by, but now she's married. She has a family. She has kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, life went on, but now she's happy. But we just have to be able to be vulnerable and let people know that, okay, we do have faults. We do have mistakes. We do go through things. I could point at my life is definitely a testament of, damn, bro, you should have died and all kind of stuff. Every single time I think about judging somebody, God just be like, remember when you did? And I'll be like, oh, okay, never mind. Let me just shut up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
You could have did. I have some stories. And it's more so like I started thinking about it. I'm just like, man, I have no idea why this grace has been placed on me like it has, because my goodness, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I have to be so thankful and gracious that when those guys pulled up in front of my house, opened a minivan, drew down guns, and asked me where I'm from, that they didn't shoot.
Yeah.
I'm now just seeing a minivan slide, multiple guys coming. But then a couple years later, you hear about that same gang killing multiple people in the community.
Multiple.
You know what I'm saying? So it's man, like sometimes the things that we look at, we really have to like really dig deep in it and be like, wow, like I was really blessed to not die. You know what I'm saying? To still be here, to still be able to impact people. And now I'm more so like an open book. I'm like, I'm not really scared of people judging me for the things that I've done. You know what I'm saying? Or the things that I was a part of and stuff like that.
No, because that's how we help people, is the power of our testimonies. And it's us, like you said, just being real. And again, showing that leadership. Even when you were sharing that story about your friend, I you know a lot of people will look at that in different ways. But like I said, I'm a big movie guy, Marvel Comics, and anything I can pull leadership out of, I always love it. And I think about the leadership that dad showed his daughter during that time, where there are some dads, it could go 50-50, right? Continually beating them down with words, what's wrong with you? But the leadership lesson that she learned, not just at whole church, but with just her relationship with her dad.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is when you do leadership the right way, it covers people, it allows them to grow and move into who they're supposed to be. And I like what you said about she eventually got married. She eventually started doing this. Her life could have been in a whole different direction if the wrong leadership was displayed to her and around her. And that's why this thing, you know, called life, it gets better with leadership.
Yeah. And that reminds me of when I was watching, since you said Marvel, had me think about X-Men when Apocalypse, what was his name? The guy from Egypt that came, I forgot his name, Apoco or something like that. But he was just like, my children have failed because they're following false leaders.
Powerful.
And I always remembered that part. And it resonates with me so well. It's, man, think about how many people are being led astray because false leadership. You know what I'm saying? It's people end up committing suicide because of false leadership. Like Jim Jones and these churches where, you know what I'm saying? Like cults and things like that. I watch a lot of documentaries about cults and I'm just like, maybe it's because the people that are supposed to be leading are scared to step up. You know what I'm saying? Are scared to put out the truth, because it's easy for somebody to manipulate themselves and others into leadership. You know what I'm saying? And me, I was just more so, say a couple months ago at one of my guys' funerals, they were like, who wants to speak? And it was a very tough time because he got killed. He got shot, but then later on died. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, man? I'm gonna just go up there. I have to say something. And I did. And then after, one of my friends, we all grew up together in the same neighborhood, but she came up to me and she was like, thank you for being a symbol of strength for us. Thank you for representing us. You know what I'm saying? And it drained me so much. Sure. Like those words, because she's a very powerful woman. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, wow. I was just physically and mentally drained because it just took a lot out of me at that moment. And I felt, wow, she's letting me know how impactful it is for me to just go up there and represent the neighborhood, represent all of us that grew up together, went to elementary, middle school, and high school together. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, I need to really push the line with this, because this could really help people and help change people's lives.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. And it's funny you're talking about Marvel movies. Even the latest one, I went to go see Ms. Marvel with the other two Marvels in there. And there's a scene in there I thought was so powerful. Captain Marvel, she was so used to being on her own, but yet She had to partner up with Miss Marvel, and then she had to partner up with Rambo's daughter. I forgot her character name in the movie. And there's one scene where they're trying to talk about how to do this, and she's just standing to the side, stay here and, until I get back. And the other two was like, wait a minute, this person is a little bit more powerful than for one person. What if we do this, and what if you do this part, and what if she does this part? And at first she was denying it, and no, that's not a good plan. But the more she was trying to do it her way and it wasn't working, she finally realized what they were adding to the picture was value. And I love the vulnerability that she said, forgive me, I'm used to doing this by myself. I'm not used to leadership. Man, I'm like, that is where a lot of us are. Mm-hmm. We're used to doing it by ourselves, whether it's working or not working. We don't tell people, like, you know what, I was wrong. And we definitely don't tell people, I'm not used to leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need more of us to just own up to that and know that it's okay. It is okay that as we're walking through our own leadership journeys, that we share some stuff along the way with those people around us, because they do have some value to add.
Yeah, and that's where you have to lower down that ego. That's what I get from that. And recognize it and look outside yourself and be like, okay, maybe I need to calm down. Maybe I need to listen. Maybe I don't know everything. Like, it's okay. Maybe they could take the lead on this. And I actually love that, because people often ask me, like, man, you're doing all of these different things. And I'm like, it's not really me. I work with a lot of different people. They're just not my employees or anything, but I have a system, you know what I'm saying, that I created based off of like different people that I work with. Yeah, I did do the website, but also have somebody that I work with that does my website as well. If I need suggestions, I'll be like, okay, let me ask somebody in this field what they think about this. And they'll say, okay, you need to do this, this, that, and the third. And I have a perfect example. I was up till 1 in the morning doing my YouTube thumbnails, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is right. Then I go on YouTube and I look at it and I'm like, oh, I didn't think about, if you were to see it in the list of videos, that the words have to be big enough for people to read. I didn't think about that. Then I had to switch it back and I redid them again. And then I sent it to my boy and he was like, man, like, you really like that? It looks like it's too much going on. He was like, you know what, man? I loved it. But he was like, I don't like it, man. I'm going to show you something. Let's do a Zoom together. Okay, sure. I'm going to do a Zoom. And he designed it in a way where I was like, oh, okay. I see what you're saying now. All right, cool. You know what, man? I'm going to use this design here on out. And I had to change 40 thumbnails all over again. But then I thought about it. I was like, I'm just thankful that I was vulnerable enough to say, you know what, bro? I'm going to listen to you. I didn't say, man, what does he know? He don't know what he's talking about. I like it. I spent hours doing this, man. I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning doing this, man. Nah, man, this is cool. You know what I'm saying? And I allowed myself to be vulnerable, allowed myself to be criticized. Then it ended up working out for the better.
That's what it's all about, man. I do a lot of military transition coaching, right? So people getting ready to get out to the military. And one of the things I always ask them, you know, are you single or are you married? And they're like, I'm married. Why? I said, so remember that when you're putting together your resume, you're only married to your wife. You're only married to your husband or your partner. Don't be married to those words that's coming off of your evaluations, because that don't mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get to a certain career or you're trying to pivot to this, just like what you just said, be open to, hey, I like what you have here, but guess what? If you put it this way, if you add these numbers next to it, if you add this impact on the end of this sentence, I think that's going to boost up the resume and make it be a little bit more smoother. So exactly to what you said, I have to tell a lot of people to get ready to transition out. Don't be married to your way and your words. Be open to see how it can be done better.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's so important. So important, because I'm open for all kind of criticism. Trust me, even before I come out with a clothing design, I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? And I know everybody has a different taste, And sometimes they get tired of me sending them stuff. And I'd be like, okay, y'all are really my focus group. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes I'm stubborn and I'm in my own head and I know that. So since I know that, I'm gonna go outside of myself and just see what other people think, see how other people feel. And that's basically just running a company, running a business, being a leader. Because leaders are basically servants to help other people. You know what I'm saying? If you're a leader, you're supposed to be criticized. You're supposed to embrace all of these things that everybody else can't. That's why you are the leader, because everybody else isn't strong enough to embrace the turmoil like you can. You know what I'm saying? And that's why you're at the front. And I had to recognize that, because I remember when Bishop T.D. Jakes was talking about him being criticized online and stuff like that. And I was just like, dang, it's so bad that these people are making Bishop T.D. Jakes feel like this. But then he was open and he was just like, and I had to remember what I'm here to do on this earth. I'm not here to serve these people that's talking about me. Even with the allegations with him being at Diddy's parties, he said, I don't get involved with freaks. And I was like, what? And I actually talked about that on my Instagram page, because I'm more so, man, it's just crazy how people could take this man that only talks about God, wellness, doing good in your life, all of these different things, and expose these allegations like that and make a mockery of him. And I was just like, this is insane. And I tell people, I'm like, honestly, I don't know if he did do it or not. I don't know. I didn't see it. He didn't say he did it, and I wasn't there. I have no idea. So I'm not going to say anything. But even if he did do it, that doesn't take away the work that he's done and how he's impacted other people. You know what I'm saying? Because don't act like there's nothing that we could pull from you that'll embarrass you if somebody was to say it, if you were a public figure.
See, you bring up another good point, Sherman, as it relates to leadership. For some people, leadership is a mirror that they don't want to look at. Even though you have no intention of trying to bring down anybody, no intention of building yourself up as to the businesses that you're doing and how successful your life is before you hit 40, you're just doing what you believe your purpose to do. But that's what leadership does sometimes. It becomes a mirror to somebody else who's jealous, feel like they don't have the same opportunities, or they're not taking advantage of opportunities, even though they have the opportunities, but they're not doing it. So that leadership becomes a mirror, unfortunately, where people, way they look at themselves, it shrink to, well, instead of feeling bad about myself, about looking at what Sherman's doing, man, I'm just going to try to bring him down. Because the more I bring him down, I'm going to make me feel better. And you just hope that people will learn. That's why you still show those people grace. Because I always tell people they're still learning on their journey. They're still growing. No ill will. No, hey, I saw what you did, but because later on down the road, they'll say, "Hey, man, I know I was saying some crazy stuff, and I was doing this and that." He said, "Man, I'm so sorry, but you know what? I appreciate the fact you never came back at me, man. You just always stay positive. You stay focused. You never let that come between us." And I always tell people, because we're all on a separate leadership journey, man. Some of us get to a certain point faster than others. It's not for me to knock you off your journey, man. I want all of us to be successful. And even if it's going to feel hurtful to me, and I don't take any of that personal. Yeah, it hurts, but I have to look at the bigger picture to say they just haven't figured out what they need to be doing yet. But when they figure it out, I still want to be right there to say, "Hey, man, how can I help you?"
That is true. That is true. Because even feeding into that will damage you. And I tell people, I'm like, man, honestly, it's like free publicity when people are talking about you like that.
That is true.
But you're putting my message out there. So sometimes I do things, I'm like, even though I'm deemed as a serious person, I still like to laugh. I still like to enjoy myself. Like, I don't want to
Sure.
be just seen as, man, Sherman is super serious. Because everybody will say, man, Sherman is hilarious. He's one of the funniest dudes I know. But
Good.
man, he's serious. He always on his stuff. There's different aspects of me that I had to embrace where I wasn't like, in order for you to be like this type of leader, you have to act and conduct yourself like this. And that's not necessarily true. Like some of us like to do them. Like, I'm not always serious. I like to joke. I like to make people smile. I like to laugh. There's different aspects to all of us. And I had to realize that within myself is now, instead of making people laugh by talking about others, you can make people laugh in a different situation. Like, that's one of the things I've always been blessed to do, which is make somebody laugh and put a smile on their face or say something creative enough to make them smile and laugh. And I ended up noticing that a lot of our great speakers were humorous as well. Like, they added a sense of humor to their speaks and they laughed and they joked. Even listening to Malcolm X, sometimes he threw some jokes in there. And I was just like, you know what, man, let's just embrace humanity, us being humans, us having needs, us having wants, us making mistakes, and not trying to be like, in order for you to be this type of person, you have to embody this type of element.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Leadership, as you said, comes in all forms and fashion and shapes. And the best thing we can do is just figure out what is our leadership style. And then also recognizing each situation requires a different part of leadership that we bring to the table. And that's okay to recognize that over time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Wow, this has been a whole conversation about leadership. I had no idea it'll be
this. That's what it's about.
Yeah. And so just to talk about you more personally.
Okay.
When did you discover what your purpose was and how did that resonate with you?
For me, it really was when I went to the military, because I went in as a human resources person, right? And you started hearing some people would say, oh man, human resources, nobody ever appreciates you guys. You get all the dirty jobs. When you do well, nobody say nothing, but when you mess up, it's all out.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized, like, people have pay problems or issues and challenges, and they would come to my office and I would talk to them, and I wouldn't tell them what to do, but I would just ask. Now we call it coaching, but back then I was just helping people. Started asking them questions. What if you did it this way? Mm-hmm. What's another way you can do? What's something that you haven't thought about that maybe when you go talk to your wife or your husband that y'all can look at it differently? And the way people walked away and said, man, I'm so glad that I spoke to you today, because I wasn't feeling the best, right? My pay was messed up. My spouse has been on me, but why don't you help get this thing fixed? But when I left you that day, man, I felt a lot better. That's really when I started seeing my purpose. Wait a minute, it's not just me doing HR, but it's the way I help people with my HR background.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that HR was just a tool to be able to reach out and help people. Just like when I became a youth minister and a youth pastor, it never meant for me like, oh, this is a stepping stone to start my own church. Nah, that wasn't my calling. My calling was I need to put myself in a situation where I can talk to kids and not beat them down with the Bible, but just ask them, what if there is something better out there?
Mm-hmm.
What if you growing up and not knowing your dad was just like that scene in Drumline where soon the movie hit, dudes give him the ticket like, yo, I made it even without you, right? I'm going to make something out of my life. I'm going to do something with my music, right? So just being able to realize, for me, it was like, hey, every role that you're in, it's not even about you, but it's how can you impact people? And that's when I realized that's what my purpose was.
Wow. It's not about you. That's why I tell people that all the time. And when you figure out that it's not about you, it's about how you impact others. I was like, man, that basically changed my life. And because I feel like we're going towards a society where people are just selfish and thinking about themselves and they don't want to sacrifice. Oh, no, I don't want to have kids, or oh, no, I'm leaving her, and oh, no, I'm leaving him, and no, I can't be with anybody that's like this or like that. It's, man, if you have to deal with something, like people are not an Android. You cannot type inside of a computer and be like, I would like somebody that's funny, that's smart, that's this, that's that, that has nice toes and this, man, come on. You're going to have to deal with something when it comes to some other human being. You more so just got to focus on yourself, and maybe the attributes you have could impact that other human being. My dad told me something. He was like, man, if you want your woman to be fine and all of this other stuff, you got to make sure you're working out, because she's going to want to do the same thing too. You got to make sure that the food that comes in your house was on point so your family could be smart and not gain weight and all of these different things. And I was like, wow, that's true, because there's plenty of things that are not allowed in my house. And pork is one of them for sure. But like high fructose corn syrup and juices with high fructose corn syrup and sodas. And nah, we're not doing that. I don't mind if you indulge in it, but it's from when we're here, this is an example. Sometimes you can have a milkshake. I'm not going to say no milkshakes at all. Sometimes I want a milkshake, but we know that regularly, this is how we eat. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I feel leadership comes in so many different ways, forms. Like you don't have to lead a battalion of 100 men. You can just lead the people in your household.
Absolutely.
And that is
a huge
enough.
Impact in the neighborhood.
Exactly. Exactly. And I actually talked about that yesterday. I was like, I don't live in a black neighborhood. And now I'm getting exposed to how people from other cultures impact the neighborhood. It's more so, hey, man, I look at it like this. There's a black guy here. He's young. He has a family. He's cool. So we're going to embrace him with us. And more than likely, we could condition him to act like us or be a dad like us and come around us, because our kids are in the same school together. Yes. Our kids are going to impact each other. So we need to be around each other and make sure each other is on point so we could impact, so our kids could be okay, because our kids have to survive together. No matter if you don't like black people, no matter if you don't like people from Iran, Iraq, Jew, the dad group is so diverse that it's hard for you to even be racist. A guy from Iran, a guy that's a Jew, a guy that's me being black, a regular white guy that's Irish, this guy's from Paris, this guy's from Germany. It's God, dog. And all of us are getting together and we meet up. We go out with each other. Hey, dads, we're going to go to the park. If any of y'all want to meet us at the park, I'm going to be there at this time. Who sends that text message out? A guy from Ukraine. And I'm just like, wow. You know what I mean? Oh, you're from Ukraine. Oh, yeah, I'm from L.A. Okay, cool. Our kids still have to play together because they go to the same school.
And that's what's so great about, and I love what you just described, man, the dynamics of leadership. Here you guys are operating as dads at this whole different level of coming together and collaboration. But the other thing that's happening behind the scenes is your kids are being exposed to, oh, if our dads are cool with each other, then they're sending us a signal that this is how you are supposed to treat people. This is how you're supposed to operate. So on the side part of success and what you guys are developing from a leadership perspective, you're going to have these kids growing up, and in their world, they're going to be like, all I know about is being around people that are different from me, but treating them the right way. So guess what? When they go to college, all of y'all kids have a chance to be those change agents in their college environment. When your kids go to the workforce and somebody might be thinking different, oh, I don't that dude Darrell, he don't look like me. No, let's give Darrell a chance. When I was growing up, there were some people that didn't look like my dad, but they were cool with each other. Y'all are creating a whole nother level of leaders for a next generation just by being cool dads.
Yeah. And to me, someone asked me, like, why don't you live in the black name? I'm like, bro, the world isn't black. You know what I'm saying? I love the fact that my kids could be around these different cultures and different types of people and stuff like that. And people that speak different languages, because that's the world. Now they could go around somebody, but oh yeah, I have a friend that's Persian. I have a friend that's this. I have a friend like that. Because as I went to school in the inner city, we don't see any other culture besides black or Mexican. And people are like, you don't have white friends? I was like, I didn't grow up with white kids. Like, they didn't go to my schools. There wasn't a white kid in the school. You know what I'm saying? And people don't understand that. And I'm like, L.A. is more segregated than you could ever imagine. Yeah. People are like, but it's L.A. I'm like, bro, our neighborhoods are segregated. Our schools are segregated. Like, we don't go over there. They don't come over here. And it's so crazy, man. People are like, y'all are one of the biggest cities in the world. And I'm like, if you go to a white school, you're going to be like one of 20, 30 black kids. And you're going to hate it because they're going to be acting like this towards you. And absolutely. I see that more and more, man, because I say I went to three different high schools. I went to King Drew, Crenshaw, and Carson. Mm-hmm. So the only schools that's developing a 20-year reunion is King Drew and Crenshaw. Carson, super diverse. Blacks, Mexicans, Samoans, Filipinos, all of these different cultures. Nobody is planning a 20-year. Yet, nobody has even planned a 10-year at Carson High School. Uh-oh, you froze.
Can you hear me? I got you back. Yep, I got you back. And what were you saying about the class reunions at Crenshaw?
Oh, so basically, Crenshaw and King Drew had a 10-year reunion. They also having a 20-year reunion. For Carson High, nobody is planning anything. And I feel like one of the reasons they didn't have a 10-year or a 20-year. And I officially graduated from Carson. But I'm like, maybe it's because it was diverse, where it's like nobody was like, okay, we're all going to get together. You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy because I'm a part of the committee at Crenshaw. Somebody asked me, and I only went to King Drew for a year, but they're still like, are you coming? Are you coming? I'm like, all right, cool.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And then I'm going to still show up. But yeah, for Carson, it's nothing. And I officially graduated from there, but I'm like, maybe it's because it was just so diverse that we still don't know how to work together and come up with something.
That very well could be the great point, man. But back to what you said about diverse schools and all that, and people don't realize, man, when you get out into the world, and that's one thing I love what you just said, you have to adjust to knowing and believing in yourself and leading yourself to the point where if nobody else around me looks like me, I still have to feel comfortable operating in this environment. It was a couple of times that I was flying Air Force Two with the VP, and I was the only person of color, right? But had I not been exposed to other environments and other cultures, that could have made me feel a certain type of way. I could have walked into that situation with these predetermined mindset of, watch, they just waiting on me to mess up. They were like, man, nobody waiting on you to mess up. They treating you like, you here, obviously you must know what you're doing, so do it.
Yeah.
You have to be conditioned to realize that you got to be able to lead yourself. I always tell everybody, the first step in leadership is leading yourself. And you got to be able to move in a way that even if you're the only male, the only female, the only person of color, only black male or minority male, the only minority female, you have to be able to operate at a high level, be confident in your skills, what you've been trained on, and who's mentored you so that you can be the best.
And that's a big deal, man, that a lot of us from the inner city go through is, what will they think of me? And I had that problem for years, man. I even told people, I don't know why, I basically exposed to them that I felt insecure around them. And that was heavy for me. You froze again. Can you hear me?
Yep. Now you just came back. So you were saying that's a big thing that people need to learn.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because say I was insecure around being around different cultures of people. Like I moved to Atlanta, I went to an HBCU, and now I'm just like around all of these people from different cultures. And they're looking at me like, bro, like, we don't even give a damn about none of that. That's you in your own mind. Like, we're not looking at you because you're black. Like, that's you. That's not me. That's you projecting that. You projecting your insecurities of yourself on me. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, what? And I was like, man, I actually thought you were a great guy. I don't look at your long hair and your beard and your tattoos and think you're a thug. I think you're one of the nicest people. And it was like, damn. But I was conditioned to feel that way. And I had to break away from that conditioning because say there was a time when I was at the park and I'm big, strong tattoos. Mm-hmm. And people were like, hey, man, how you doing? I'm this person. And you're thinking like, what? You're not scared of me? No. Like, what? You seem like a nice guy. Oh, I actually am a nice guy. Oh, that's what I'm picking up based off of the energy that you that you're giving out. I don't look at you like that. But then that's noticed that we're judging people off of looks and we're not judging people based off of energy. You know what I'm saying? And we have to move towards more so energy more than like the physicality of what somebody looks like. And I cannot stress that enough, man, because just because somebody has a tattoo, long hair, beard, this and that, and all these different things does not mean anything. And I've noticed that just recently. I went to model for a brand. Mm-hmm. And I was in the house. I was the only black person. white people there and all this. So I'm like, man, I'm really about to sleep in a house with some white people I never met before and all of these different things. And after that trip, we all ended up being pretty close. But the guy that's the CEO of the company, he's from Texas and he played baseball. And he was like, man, like I playing baseball, I was around black people and I have black friends. And oh yeah, I had a black friend that went to Texas Southern and this is that and the third. But here I am looking like, man, he's got his blonde hair, blue eyes. He's a white man from Texas. He must be racist or he must be, not to say that I thought that, but that's something.
You know, in our minds, some
you know
people's
what I'm
minds. That
yeah,
happens.
In our minds.
Right.
But little did I know, once I got to know him, we had a lot of similarities. We're friends till this day. He'll tell,
there
hey, how's
go.
It going? You know what I mean? And it's, man, it's just amazing what can happen when you just start to open up your own mind and not let any of these negative forethoughts cloud your mind and you could just be open. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. One thing I always say, Sherman, is a lot of times our values, because that's really what it comes down to, our values allow us to be closer than we could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, Darrell, this has been a great conversation. I'm going to connect you, if you don't mind, with one of my friends in D.C. He's from
Sure.
Washington, too. He works at Howard University. So I'm not sure if you're,
yep.
you work with them in some type of capacity.
I do not. So I work for the government on a base called Fort Meade, Maryland. It's between Baltimore and Annapolis. But the way stuff is so close around here, yeah, I pass by Howard when I'm driving into D.C., going to some other stuff. So, yeah, man, definitely connect me and whatever I can do to help. Like I said, I'm like 58 now. So I already know, like you had that conversation earlier about, man, I know I'm on the back end. I'm not trying to hide it. I'm not trying to run from it. I'm just trying to be as impactful as I can on the way out. So when they see that dash, I preached a sermon that before, what's in the dash, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just want people to go, man, I don't know about all that other stuff. Before he came to D.C. or growing up in Compton, all I know is when I was around that dude, he was helpful.
And that's all that matters. So, Darrell, where can people find you?
Sherman, they can find me on Facebook through Alliance Seminars Coaching. They can go to our website, allianceseminars.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn. And my whole thing, when they go to the website, they'll see I'm just all about using my gifts now to help people get to their purpose. That is really what I'm about in life. And it flows through my wife, my kids. So I don't have to change up. That's just how I live my life. I'm just helping people get to their purpose. And the only way I can do that is for me to keep growing myself. So it just falls right in line with why I'm on this earth.
Man, praise the Lord. Thank you so much for being part of the Militant Grind podcast and have a very blessed weekend and keep doing what you're doing, man. I'm sure this episode on leadership is going to impact a lot of people and we're leaving our digital footprint day by day. So grandkids, kids, and all of them are going to see this and they're going to see how well spoken their grandfather, great grandfather was, whatever. So yeah, let's keep it pushing. I appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. And keep doing what you're doing too, because we need more shows like this. Definitely want to shout you out as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.